You're listening to the Book Club at 91.7. I'm Mark Purcell. On the phone with me is writer Roseanne Montillo. Her book is The Wilderness of Ruin, a tale of madness, fire, and the hunt for America's youngest serial killer. It's set in Boston back in the 1800s. Roseanne Montillo, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you very much for having me.
You say you ran across the story of Jesse Pomeroy while you were working on your book, The Lady and Her Monsters, your previous book. What did you run across?
I actually came across a collection of material that belonged to one of the detectives working on the case. His name was James Wood, and he was a local detective who worked in the Boston Police Department. He was very famous here in the area. He was a sort of your classic studly detective, if you will. He was a go-getter. He was very tough. He could be gentle sometimes, but he had that attitude that most of the 1800s detectives had. And he liked to get himself involved in some of the toughest cases here in Boston. And he left behind a collection of material that spanned pretty much 70 years or so. He worked in some of the major cases here in the entire New England area. In fact, he opened up the first detective agency here in New England. And it seemed very surprising to me because he had worked on some of the most horrific cases in the area. But still, the one that really scared him the most was the case of Jesse Pomeroy. And when you think about it, he was a very young boy, and still he had such an effect on this really tough detective that he couldn't forget about him. So it struck me as being very surprising that a 14-year-old boy could have such an effect on a tough, tough detective like him.
Well, Jesse Pomeroy, growing up there in the mid-1800s in Boston, had kind of a rough life, a rather overbearing mother. But set the scene for Jesse and tell us about his crimes.
Well, Jesse grew up in a very tough neighborhood. He grew up in Charlestown, an area of Boston. And he was actually born with a defect in his right eye. His eye was what they called an albino eye. It actually had kind of a mucousy white area over his pupil. And he was beat up for it. He was taunted by his neighborhood kids. He was really taunted by his schoolmates. And he was actually beat up by his own father, who believed that that was a sign of the devil, that he was possessed by the devil. So he grew up being very abused by his own father, who beat him up with a leather belt. He enjoyed having Jesse stripped completely naked and beat him up for many, many years. So Jesse grew up being abused from a very young age until he was old enough to retaliate. And for a long time, he couldn't do anything about it because he was very puny, if you will, until he underwent kind of a growth spur, and he grew to a very large size. So instead of retaliating on those who were making fun of him, he decided that the best way to do that would be to impart the same kind of abuse that people were doing on him on children who were much younger and defenseless than he was. And he enjoyed crossing the bridge from Charlestown to a nearby city, which was Chelsea. And he would meet and befriend little children on their own who were playing around on their own, and he would take them to places that were very secluded, sort of forested areas, and give them candy, give them money, small tokens of his friendship, until they trusted him, until they actually found out that he didn't want to be their friend, but really what he wanted to do was do all kinds of unspeakable things to them. He would beat them up. He would tie them up. He would strip them, just like things had been done on him. And eventually he graduated to sexually assaulted them. And people didn't really know what to make of these assaults that were committed on children like all over the city.
I'm speaking with Roseanne Montillo. She's the author of The Wilderness of Ruin, a tale of madness, fire, and the hunt for America's youngest serial killer. It takes place in Boston, a true story in the mid-1800s, the story of Jesse Pomeroy. And And these attacks had kind of escalated, and they all talked about Jesse's eye, or they identified a larger boy leading a younger child away. Always mentioned that he had a milky eye, as they said. But it escalated and took a serious turn. And explain what happened when he and his mom moved into the new store.
Well, they moved. His mother came to realize that some of the assaults that were happening in Chelsea maybe were due to her son. And instead of going to the police to try to figure out a way for him to stop, what she did was move from Charlestown to South Boston, where people were unaware of the things that he had done before. She pretty much gave him a new neighborhood in which to play around, if you will, and a whole new score of children on which to conduct his business. And in fact, soon enough, after about a couple of weeks that they were there in South Boston, little children in the area started talking about a tall young boy who would do the same thing to them that had been done to the children in Chelsea. He would take them on the beaches of South Boston. He would strip them naked, beat them up with a leather belt as well, tie them up. And the children were scared. They didn't know what to make of it until a young boy realized that there was something wrong with this child, with this tall boy's eye. They eventually figured out that maybe Jesse was the one who was committing these crimes. And in fact, silly as it sounds, they didn't have to go very far to find him. One day he just, plainly as day, he walked into the police department, and the boy he had just assaulted recognized him, and they figured out that he had given himself up.
So this was, he was caught and then let go, and then a body was found.
Yes, he was placed in a reform school, but quickly enough, he was let go because of some relationships that his mother had had with a few officials in the area as well. And soon enough, as soon as he returned home, a young girl, only 10 years old, disappeared in the neighborhood. And right away, people believed he had been the guilty party, that he had done something terrible to her. The body hadn't been found. They searched the store where the family lived, and still she wasn't found at all until about 4 weeks later, 4 or 5 weeks later, a little boy was found dead on the beaches of South Boston. And it was pretty much the same thing that he had done on the little boys, with the addition that this boy was dead. He had stabbed the little boy. He had sexually mutilated him. He had taken out his right eye and had set his body on fire as well. Silly as it sounds, Jesse hadn't taken precautions to make sure that no one saw him committing the crime. In fact, two people nearby realized that something was going on, and they noticed that a young, tall boy was running away from the scene, and they were able to give a pretty good description, and Jesse was arrested.
So Jesse went through the trial. At first he confessed, and then he recanted his confession. He did go to trial. He was sent to prison at age of 15 and sent. There was a big debate over whether to execute him or not. Being a young adolescent, he was basically sentenced to life in prison in solitary confinement and stayed that way for years.
He did, over four decades. He was one of the second oldest inmate to stay in solitary confinement for that long. And he thrived in there, believe it or not. He did very well, which was kind of unusual. Most people who were placed in solitary confinement had a history of committing suicide just after a week or so, because it was such an impossible situation. On the other hand, Jesse was only 16 when he was placed there, and he did very, very well, as well as one could do. And he learned half a dozen languages. He studied. He liked to read. That's not to say that he didn't try to escape. In fact, he tried many, many times, even though he knew very well that if he had been able to leave, someone would have killed him on the outside. He was still not a very well-liked individual. So even if he made it on the outside, he would have died anyway. But still, he was very resourceful. He was an incredibly smart man, and he made sure that the officials stayed on their toes, so to speak. So, but he thrived in that environment.
Roseanne Montillo is the author of The Wilderness of Bruin, A Tale of Madness, Fire, and the Hunt for America's Youngest Serial Killer. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And Roseanne, it's surprising in your book all the famous personages who cross paths with Jesse Pomeroy's story. Herman Melville's in here. Dr. Oliver Wendell Holmes is in here as well. Explain how they were part of Pomeroy's story.
Well, Oliver Wendell Holmes, he lived in the area, in the Boston area, around the time of the Pomeroy case as well. And he had a fascination for sort of the macabre, the crime stories, the legal areas that were taking place. And he was against killing Pomeroy. And he made sure that everybody knew about it. He wanted Pomeroy to be placed in an insane asylum. He believed that it would be more beneficial for the people of Massachusetts to learn what was happening to this boy, to find out why he had killed the little children, because he had a feeling that Pomeroy was not the only example of children who kill. So if people, doctors, had a chance to study him, they could learn a little bit more about what made children conduct themselves the way they did. And he wanted to study him. But, of course, the governor didn't really take his words into effect all that much. Herman Melville was also in the area when the trial was happening, and he was a friend of Oliver Wendell Holmes. So he was also fascinated with the whole idea of mental illness and crimes as well. Melville had written quite a bit up until that point about mental illness in his fiction. He had a history of mental illness in his own family. His father, his brother, many cousins had succumbed to the disease. And he also, if you read the manuscripts and the letters that he left behind, had kind of a fear and fascination that he would also, at some point in his life, have to deal with the disease himself. So he tried, and every occasion that he had to study the disease, he did that as well. So Pomeroy was an example of that. He was fascinated by him.
And I neglected to point out that this was in the day before people accused of crimes could plead in the insanity defense. There was no such thing in the courts at the time.
No, I mean, they tried to make sure that maybe Pomeroy, the courts and his lawyers and everybody involved in his case, maybe they wanted to tell the public that maybe Pomeroy suffered from some kind of mental imbalance, that maybe this was some kind of familial history of mental imbalance, but really they couldn't use that. And there really wasn't any history of it to begin with. Pomeroy, his family was a little bit disturbed, but no more than any other family at, you know, in his neighborhood, if you will.
Right.
They couldn't pinpoint anything that would make his parents passing down any disease of any kind. So, no, they couldn't find anything that would make him any different than anybody else. So they couldn't use that defense at all.
A lot to think about in your book. Thank you for provoking those thoughts, and thank you for spending some time this morning with me.
Thank you very much for having me.
Roseanne Montillo, her book is The Wilderness of Ruin, A Tale of Madness, Fire, and the Hunt for America's Youngest Serial Killer. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. This is The Book Club at 91.7.